We don't quite have a quorum yet, but we're going to get started, and we'll call it to order once we get a quorum. This 3685, is going to be laid over. So is when I find out how much money we all get to spend here. We'll start talk. We'll actually start trying to put a budget together if there's going to be one. So why don't I ask you to introduce yourself, although we all know you, and introduce your, I'll move your bill. I'll move House File 36. This one? Yep, 85 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And if
you.
We need to call you back to move it on its own, we will.
Sounds good. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3685 is a supplemental appropriation grant for Minnesota Diversified Industries. MDI is a valued asset not only in my district but throughout Minnesota, providing integrated workforce or providing manufacturing jobs for people with disabilities. MDI, the employees of MDI operate through an integrated workforce approach, with nearly half of all employees being people with disabilities. People with and without disabilities work side by side to produce logistics containers. MDI recently opened a standard and custom packing facility in Hibbing, and they are a strong economic driver in our region. They also have plants in Minneapolis, Grand Rapids, and Cohasset. Last year, state funding for MDI was reduced from $450,000 requested in their budget proposal to only $100,000 annually. As a result of this, four employment support and placement positions have been eliminated. MDI has sought funding from private donations with limited success, and unfortunately, the company must still find at least another $200,000 in expenses to trim. I believe MDI's track record merits further investment from the legislature, and we should make them whole during this session. I've been a longtime fan of MDI's work to teach vital leadership skills to people with disabilities. What MDI brings to the table in this regard is unparalleled in our region and in our state, giving people the skills not just to perform tasks as part of a workday, but to understand their own strengths, learn alongside with their coworkers to collaborate as a team, and to take on new challenges. According to Wilder Research, every dollar invested in MDI produces a social return on investments of $4.87. That's a very good value. Organizations like MDI deserve our support so they can continue to offer these meaningful employment opportunities, which deliver not just skills on the job, but valuable life skills as well. I hope that you will consider the importance of this organization and the value it provides and deliver the investments this session. With me today, I have Peter McDermott and a host of other testifiers. If I can turn it over to them, I would like to do that.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Peter McDermott. I'm the president and CEO of MDI. With me is Gene Eglinton and Christy Armbruster, who will introduce themselves and a little bit about their backgrounds and how they got involved in MDI. My background is I'm a CPA in active, with CFO of Plan and Paper Company and Cirrus Design up in Duluth, and an economic development volunteer for my entire career, and actually was professionally for about 6 years. I have a passion for actually creating jobs. And when I got this job about 11 years ago, I found that it was a MDI. We're creating jobs for people with disabilities. I thought it was going to be a bigger challenge business-wise, because I knew about business, but I didn't know about working with people with disabilities. It turns out it's easier. People with disabilities appreciate their jobs. They show up for work on time, and they work to their capabilities, which is oftentimes 100% productivity. What I thought I would start with is a presentation, if I can get it open here. Yep. And just a quick, it's about a 3-minute video on a story about a couple of people and what it means for them to work at MDI.
My name is Dell. I've survived 2 brain injuries in my lifetime. The one rendering me disabled, the last one, where I had infection on my brain.
Hi, my name is Karen. The things that I struggle with, I have high anxiety. I still deal with a little bit of paranoia, and I'm dealing with the public. I was scared to ask for help at work because I have a disability. It's hard for me to focus at work when I have bad thoughts going through my mind and I start to get very anxious. I start making mistakes. Sometimes I'll walk away from my work and kind of forget what I'm doing.
The most difficult part of having a brain injury, the way that I took in information was different. The time that I needed to process that information changed. And upon seeing the scars on my head, people started to treat me differently when I was still the same person on the inside. I just didn't respond like I used to.
MDI has helped me with the resources in the community for personal needs outside of work. I am now financially responsible and independent from government support. I can talk to any of the supervisors. They will help me to get back on track or find resources to help me with those issues.
MDI support services helped me in the area of setting up transportation services. And then being in this environment, so many people helped me when I got here. It's one of the only ways I feel like I can give back to the people that helped me when I came here. And I mean, to me, that made me feel at home.
Because of MDI, I moved out of a group home and I have my own apartment now. I take better care of my mental and physical health and have better self-esteem because of the emotional supports and job coaching I receive. I don't suffer from my disabilities. I am able to overcome my disabilities with the support that I receive from MDI.
People have to get out of their own way sometime. You know, when you're a survivor or something, you usually have a wall that you set up for everybody else. And until you get to a place like MDI, you don't even realize these places exist or that that's even possible.
Every day when I come to work, I am actually glad to come to work because I know if my day is starting off bad or if my day starts to begin to be bad here, that the line leads and the supervisors will actually help me to have a better day and do a better job.
And even though we're just making certain products, together as a team, we are getting these products out the door, and I was a part of that. That's important to me. And for my kids, it says, Dad is still out here and he's still thriving, because the last thing I want them to think is that I had a brain injury and I was unable to go beyond that.
Thank you. As you can see, actually, any one of us in this room is this close to being a person with disabilities. An accident you might happen or whatever to you that would cause an injury that would cause you to have disabilities. So, MDI, first of all, we want to thank you for your past support. The state of Minnesota has been a supporter of MDI for a long time, actually. For the last 4 years, to the tune of about $450,000 up to last June. And actually, for the 6 years prior to that, we've come to the legislature to get dollars because we don't fit the model for VRS, the deed VRS. We actually serve people with one significant functional limitation or more to work, where they will only serve people with three or more significant functional limitations. And so, but anyway, thank you. So we've had to go to the legislature, and that's what we've done. And so we'll just move on to the slides here.
So wait
yep.
a minute, if I might. So I want to make sure everybody on the committee understands that you don't fit in any perfect space for grants or anything else.
Not we have had grants for VRS, but not through the normal extended employment program.
Yeah, no, most of that came when Rookie was the chair here, and he was a master at making some of the stuff work. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of crazy. When I first got to MDI 11 and a half years ago, literally, I got a letter that said we're not going to get funded by extended employment anymore because we hadn't filed some returns and whatever. And so I said, well, we'll get back into the program. We'll have CARF certification. That's the Commission for the Accreditation of Rehabilitation Facilities. We'll do everything we need to do and get back in the program. And we have not been able to get back in the program. And I've had many, many meetings with them. And they say, well, you do good work, but you just don't fit our model.
Great.
So, at any rate.
And I'm leaving, so I want everybody on this committee. I hope many of them come back. And I think I say that at least once in a meeting here. Bob and I are both leaving, and Bob and I have had a long history with you and kind of understand some of this. But I want the rest of the committee and members on the committee to understand you do great work in three or four different locations,
right,
and you don't fit the model. I won't go into anything from last right. year, but everybody needs to understand why this is one of those times where direct appropriation is appropriate.
So. Thank you for that. So let's see, I jumped through the agenda. Hold on a second. Okay, so we were just going to talk about who MDI serves, who is MDI, and the consequences of the reduced funding and what the funding is actually used for. So our target population is 100,000 people that are not served by DHS or DVRS. And these are people, as I said earlier, with one SFL or two SFLs. We serve people with one, two, three, or four SFLs, but at least one. And they're documented. When they go to a doctor and they get that reviewed, they bring it back to a rehab specialist that looks at it and says, okay, this is a functional limitation to work. So then that was the video. So I'm going to just turn it over to Jean Eglinton, who introduced herself and her background, and then a few more words about MDI.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Mahoney and members. My name is Jean Eglinton. I'm the Director of Employment Services at MDI. I've spent my career working with people with disabilities in the employment settings, starting while I was in college, working at a day training and habilitation center back in the 1980s. I hate to say it was that long ago. In all my experiences of working in the field of disability, I have to say MDI's workforce development model makes sense and it works. MDI offers opportunities for people with disabilities that have not worked or been unable to maintain a job. It is an opportunity for successful employment. We are a social enterprise that is effective and cost efficient. All of our employees are paid minimum wage and offered benefits. Our mission is to serve people with disabilities by offering inclusive employment opportunities and services. As was said earlier, for the past 4 years, MDI was awarded a state appropriation of $450. But last year, at the end of the legislative session, that funding was cut by $350,000. The consequence of this cut, as Representative Sandsted said, was a reduction in four support positions, meaning less support for our employees with disabilities. Even with those cuts, we still have a deficit of $200,000 for employment services. The success of MDI is attributed to our culture of providing support to employees in a respectful and inclusive environment. We focus on each employee's skills and abilities and match them to the jobs that need to be completed. For every dollar invested in MDI, there is a $4.87 return on investment, meaning our employees become self-sufficient, limiting, or no longer receiving government benefits. Support for MDI employees with disabilities truly is given by each and every MDI employee, but our employment services team has that primary responsibility to support our employees with disabilities. Supports range from job coaching when someone starts to minimal job coaching as they become more familiar with their responsibilities. It also becomes apparent in different types of accommodations, such as modified work schedules. Maybe someone needs to take a little bit longer break because of, as Karen said, sometimes things get in her head and she just needs time to be off the work floor for a little bit. Also accommodating longer learning curves and providing training and development opportunities to all of our employees. On behalf of all of our employees with and without disabilities in Minneapolis and our northern operations, thank you for your support in funding MDI. I would like to introduce Christy, a long-term employee of MDI who receives support from the Employment Services team, but more importantly, is a valued member of our workforce.
Good morning. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Christy Armbruster. Thank you for supporting and funding to MDI in the past. I started working at MDI in 1988 when I was 21 years old. My work means a lot to me. I stay at MDI because I feel comfortable working here. When I was in my younger years, I was picked on because I wear glasses, stutter, and I have a learning disability. I have very low self-esteem. Working at MDI, I get the support I need to help me feel better, and I am respected, and I have friends. Over the years, I've gotten to learn many new jobs. On November 7th of 2018, I was promoted as office service specialist. Some of my job responsibilities are answering phones, taking care of customers, timekeeping, distributing mail, and posting and emailing invoices to customers. I like my job because it allows me to advance my skill set, take on new challenges, and grow as an employee and a person. The funding from the state is important. I may not have gotten the support I needed to try new jobs and be successful without it.
Thank you. I'm glad you found a place where you can feel respected and valued. Do you have anything else?
No, I think that's it. I think we have four locations. We're in Minneapolis, Grand Rapids, Cohasset, and Hibbing, and we're employing 372 people right now, 168 with disabilities. And this is down from last year. We had about 208 people with disabilities last year, but now we have about 168.
I'm going to open it up for questions, but I'm going to start with one question. In the Labor Committee, they heard a bill that had about how people are paid, and I don't think this is a sheltered workshop, but it's a different kind of employment possibility. What are your pay rates?
Our pay, we pay everybody at least minimum wage, and our employees get paid benefits. Mm-hmm. So, and it varies anywhere from the minimum wage up to, for a production worker, up to about $14 an hour.
Thank you. Representative Haley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be a question for you, to your point about trying to understand what we've done in the past. Do you know how much money we've put into the DEED program, the DVRS, and how many people that serves? I'm just looking for a kind of a comparison of.
We'd have to go to staff for that one.
Well, I've seen the, I haven't seen one recently, but a couple of years ago, the year-end report, it was about $20,000 a job for supporting someone through VRS to get a job, someone with disabilities, and we're doing it for somewhere between $2,500 and $3,000 a year. So it's a much more efficient way to do it. But there is a year-end report from VRS that you can access.
There is. I just don't have it with me.
Okay, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll follow up.
Yes.
Representative Stancy, thanks for bringing this forward. And I was just doing the math when you made that comment before. So you said for $450,000 a year, which is what you've requested before, and you serve 372 people.
That's total employment, is 168 of which right now are people with disabilities. So it's people with and without disability, which is an important part of the model. It's an inclusive environment. In fact, I don't know what people's disabilities are unless somebody like Christy comes forward or Dell, and Karen, because that's not important. They're employees, and that's kind of a nuance. We don't call them clients or consumers; we call them employees because everybody's employee. I'm an employee; they're employees, and we treat them with the same respect that everybody should get.
Thank you very much,
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Sansley, thanks for bringing this bill forward. I sit on the board of directors for West Central Industries, which is a kind of a sister company like yours, I think, help a lot of folks. We do in community and also in shop type work for folks with disabilities. My question is, I do support this and what your work is doing. And what our committee has been trying to work on is to make sure that these industries, and I've been more intimate with our executive director when it comes to her issues with some of the wage theft bill that has come out recently. Have you experienced some issues that we need to work on to make the, again, I hear at least everybody's making minimum, but you've got some folks up to 14 and probably different jobs pay differently for different functions. And so do we need to work on some things to make it a little bit more streamlined for your operation? Because I also know the paperwork in your world is enormous. And that's something I think that our whole team here wants to make sure we hear from you. We're coming up with that later this week, but I just ask the question because I know it's an issue for West Central. I'm asking it to see if it's you're seeing that in your world as well.
Are you talking about the compliance issues that we
yes.
have? Yes. Well, yeah, they are. It's amazing. Actually, I think the 1 year, I think it was the year that Jean started, she had about 9 different compliance activities.
Audits.
She had audits that people were coming in and checking all the documentation and whatever. And it's highly regulated, actually, you know, because we're dealing with vulnerable adults, so I have to take mandated reporting training every year, and so does our board of directors and senior management people. I mean, there's a lot of things that go along with it. And so when I said, and I think we made the comment, we're about 95% self-sufficient. We sell products and services. We sell the Postal Service box. That box that we've delivered about $97 million to the Postal Service over the last 25 years. And this is a new product that we developed for Amazon. So last year, we had about 2.4 million in sales to Amazon of that box that we designed. It took over a year to design that box. But to answer your question, yeah, there's lots that goes on. I mean, it's a complex business. It's the normal business, if you will, but then it's also got all this add-on. And I believe we can sell products and services, and people like Christy and Dill and Karen can earn their wages and benefits. But the problem is to pay for the extra support, the employment services support. I really think it's the community and the state's responsibility, frankly. And I can't put that on the customers. And so that's how our model works. And we pay minimum wage. And maybe I shouldn't go off on this tangent, but you know, some other places that have people with a very, very low productivity, 10%, it's very difficult to pay minimum wage and make that work unless it's somehow subsidized. And we don't take a position, it's not our deal because we're paying minimum wage and benefits, but we're dealing with people that have the opportunity to be 70 or 80% at least productive. And in often cases, that gal that you saw, Karen, she's 140% productive. I mean, she's amazing, actually. So, but thank just you. Given the opportunity, the problem in the world, the business folks don't do it in general. There are some businesses, and we are working with Medtronic and Boston Scientific and other companies that want to hire people with disabilities on how to do that. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think maybe, and I don't know if I was, Mr. Chair, if I was pointing it more towards Gene, just about the wages and sort of the newness of our bill last year that I supported at the very end to make sure that we catch everybody to make sure we're very open and transparent about what folks are making. Has this been a challenge, though, for your office?
So there is no direct impact on MDI, and it's because we do not pay anyone less than minimum wage. But we do have many other reporting because of all of the different government entities that we deal with.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, if I may ask a clarifying question, and I think Representative Baker is looking to the wage theft law that was passed last year and put in a series of notifications that you had to do. And the complaint has been that it's burdensome with its paperwork. We'll get to that on my next statement on Thursday. But and his question, and I think everyone's question is it exceedingly burdensome? Were these 9 audits connected to the wage theft law that was put into place? We're just trying to find, we're just getting squared up for our Thursday meeting.
I
promise we won't hold you accountable.
So our audits are generally not connected with that, but each government entity that we have license or certification to provide services to, there is an audit connected with that. And I think what other providers are challenged with is that they not only have to do the additional paperwork for the wage theft, they also have many other things that have to be done for reporting of the waivered services that people get, and then changing from day and full day billing to 15-minute units. I do some of that, and it is very tedious and cumbersome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sounds like a great program. We have shelter workshops down where I live that are subject to the Olmstead Act, which is a federal judge out in Washington that decided that as many people that could be put from MRCI into the private workforce. How do you get around that?
We're right in between. We're a nonprofit social enterprise, so we operate very much like a business. And we have, right now, we're about 46% people with disabilities. Olmstead was very concerned that people weren't given the opportunity to work in the most inclusive environment possible. Mm-hmm. And so I think in our case we are, because the folks that work at MDI have problems getting jobs in the community. I mean, they do. And so as much, by the way, if the world was perfect, MDI wouldn't exist, MCI wouldn't exist. And people in the private sector would be hiring people with disabilities. You know, there's a big movement for DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and it's focused on, you know, veterans and LGBTQ and gender and whatnot. People with disabilities tend to be at the back of the diversity bus because they're not looked at. But there's a significant part of the population. It's just businesses. And I had one business owner tell me, you know, Peter, I tried it once. I tried hiring a person with disabilities. It didn't work out. So I'm not going to do that anymore. Well, that's ridiculous. He's hired people. You know, you always can hire bad. You have to get the right fit. And that's what Jean and her staff do. She makes sure it's the right fit. And by the way, if she can't find a fit for an MDI, it doesn't work for them to do the kind of work that we do, she'll help them get a job in the community too. So we do that work also. But yeah, the Olmstead, I think it's the right approach. It's just the world isn't changing fast enough, I mean, as far as the for-profit world.
I would just add that what we know is that all people with disabilities have difficulty finding employment. I just got an email from one of our salespeople who was out on a sales call, and there's a gentleman that has a bachelor's degree and he has a stutter, and he is being limited because of that stutter. So we're going to try and reach out to him and help him. So it's all people with disabilities that are challenged in finding that job. Some may be able to keep that job. Some others may be challenged. Those are the ones that likely end up with MDI or the ones that aren't able to retain that job.
Thank you. Was there another question? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion to lay this over. Oh, would you like to close with them?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes. Members, if you haven't had the opportunity to visit MDI, I would strongly urge you to find one of the facilities near you. They are across Minnesota. It will probably be a life-changing experience for you. I think it's really important to remind you that without MDI, many of these individuals, employees, would not be working, and they would be drawing on some form of government assistance. And here we're coming in for an ask, you know, in totality in the biennium of $450,000. I don't have the number for you, but I would be very confident in saying the value of that investment compared to the cost of what they would be drawing on government services would really be this is a good value is what I'm saying. This is a very good value. I think that the other thing I want people to know is MDI makes a change in the lives of individuals with disabilities. I met one young gentleman who was less than 40 who had suffered a traumatic brain injury as a result of a stroke. And he had multiple strokes and has since passed away. But his body was affected. He still had the desire to work. He had a wife. He had small children. And MDI gave him a place to belong and a purpose. in a time when his life was changed permanently, and yet he continued to contribute. And that was really remarkable. Again, this is a company that is like no other. So funding sources, revenue streams are really limited. So I'm asking humbly that you strongly consider supporting this. I really think it's a win-win for everyone. And I thank you for listening.
Thank you. We will be laying this over for possible inclusion. We don't need to vote on it. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
We have the minutes here. Representative Gunter, I'm sure you've read the minutes in its entirety, and would you care to move them?
I would certainly be glad to move them.
We have the minutes in front of us. Are there any additions or corrections or deletions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes as presented, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Next on the agenda is House File 3413. Representative Hassan, Economic Development Department, Housekeeping. Good morning.
Good morning.
Would you care to move your bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I move House File 3413. I just presented House File 3358. Sorry. 3413 be laid over.
I think, Representative Hassan, I think we're going to just send this right to the General Register.
Send it. Right.
You're so eloquent on the floor, I'm just looking forward to you having to move it on the floor.
It's too early, and I already presented a bill, so I moved this to the General Register.
Thank you.
Good morning, members. This is House File 3314. Is relating to economic development, making certain department housekeeping changes. Actually, I have an amendment. Sorry. Mr. Chair, I move the A1 amendment.
Actually, that's fine, but it's unfair to ask you to explain it, seeing how it was an amendment that I wrote up.
I'm not even going to try.
And it's early morning, so I'll explain it this way.
Yeah.
This amendment, when you asked to put this in April, the purpose for some of this stuff and these kind of bills is to give us more information to make decisions on. And we're typically in April, we're pretty deep into trying to figure out the final bills and some of the conference committee stuff. And if we don't really get that information until April, it's very hard to include that in what we're trying to understand as programs that work and some that don't work. So unless there's serious objections from the department, I would like to see this in March, if you are okay with that, Adam.
We're fine. We accept the amendment.
Thank you. All in favor, are there any questions on the A1 amendment? All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. And we have the bill as the way the chair and the member care to have it.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill makes two minor changes on the Emerging Entrepreneur Programs Required Report. And we just accepted an amendment instead of April for March, And the other minor change is it clarifies that department's annual report to the legislator should cover loans made in the previous year calendar. I have a testifier here with me.
Kevin, good to see you.
Good morning.
Please identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members, Kevin McKinnon. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development at BEAD. Yes, this housekeeping change reflects the reporting requirements that we place on the nonprofits who are lenders in this program. Moving it to March gives them a little bit more time and obviously us to compile the report and submit to you.
Anything else? I'll open it up to questions.
Please do.
Any questions? Any questions?
Nope.
Oh, no.
Nope.
It's hard for me to look to the left.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much, Representative, for bringing this bill forward, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon. So I have a few questions about the program, the Emerging Entrepreneur. I know there are some few things that we want to even go beyond. Number one, the stipulation that we have to add additional 4% to businesses who are trying to make ends meet. Do we have any other program within loan program that adds additional to the market rate interest plus 4% program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knorr, we do not have other programs that add those requirements on. However, again, the nonprofit lenders who are doing this work use those funds as administrative funds for them to monitor the loans, do the servicing, those types of things. So they do all the due diligence. The department just approves the loans. And so that's a source of income for them.
Representative North.
Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner, the other question that I have is, we've spent the metro resources in this program, I'm assuming, and we're still left with outstate, which is more than 50% of the allocation that we made last year. Is that true, or how are we giving that resources to the emerging entrepreneur?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knorr, actually it's the opposite. We've actually made more loans in greater Minnesota than we have in the metropolitan area. The history of the program over the last 3 years, we've done 83 loans in greater Minnesota, totaling $2.3 million. In the metro, we've done 74 loans, totaling $2.1 million. The issue that you're bringing up is that we have to have a geographic balance every year, so 50-50 split between greater Minnesota and the metro, up until March 31st. After March 31st, then the loans can go anywhere in the state. So oftentimes we're waiting for one location to catch up before we can continue to do more loans in one of the geographies.
Representative North.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking forward to having a greater discussion about how we actually tweak this whole program, because it's not working for many entrepreneurs that I've met because of the burdensome of some of the process of the 50% requirement matching, the additional, when you look at it, it's almost 7%. So someone would rather go to the bank and get the resources that they need than come to DEED or the nonprofit organization. We also don't provide any technical assistance to the nonprofit entities who are serving this startups or continuing businesses. So I think we need to look into this program and provide enough resources, at the same time look into how we can provide more help. Because if you look at the report, only 1% of the Native Americans received from the last report that I looked into, 3% Hispanic, and also 32% of African American. The 50% went to women-owned businesses, as I recall from the last report. So I'm more interested in taking a deep dive and ensuring that we're providing resources to startup businesses and businesses who need help so that they can provide employment and continue to thrive. So looking forward to that conversation. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
So Representative Norrie, would you be at this point asking for a meeting in your office with the deed personnel to explain this a little deeper, and then we can bring it back here?
Absolutely. I think that will be the appropriate way. If we're going to be making that minor amendment, I think we should go for the amendment that is necessary to make this program functional and help those businesses that need help. I do have a bill, Mr. Chair, which I'm asking to add $25 million without changing some of the other process. But this is to help, you know, the businesses that need really help to continue providing services mm-hmm. in this field.
Okay, that's perfectly fine. I do want to make sure that you understand that I've been doing this for 20 years. You've been doing it for about 24. Has Greater Minnesota ever gotten less than 65 or 66% of the funds coming out of this committee?
I think Greater Minnesota has done fairly well, and there's a host of reasons for that, and you can meet in my office and we'll discuss that.
And he'll get you a hot dog or something. All right. If you're going to try and do that this year, would you mind if I held this over for possible inclusion and then bring it back if everyone can figure out something and we can just do it? We don't have to have a hearing on it at all. We can just move it to the floor.
Fine with the department, so I think we can do that.
The department doesn't count right now.
Well, it's their bill that I'm carrying.
My bill now. Yep.
It's fine, Mr. Chair. We can lay it over.
So I'm going to are there any other questions? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Nur's comments about the awards of, let's say, to the Native Americans. I believe you said 1%. I'd be interested in discovering exactly how many Native American entities or businessmen or whoever applied for anything. You know, so when you report 1%, you know, it's quite possibly that 50% of the applicants did receive funding. So I'd be interested in that number as well.
So seeing no other questions, I'll move it. I'm going to change my motion that, no, you get to change your motion on House File 3413 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion and ask that this be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Thank you. Nor, would you care to take the gavel? You can just take it from there.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr.
You
Chair.
You have House File 3611. Will you please move that House file?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3611. Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask that it be laid over, and if we we may be moving a lot of bills directly to the General Register, without having a second hearing. They're still trying to figure out how they want the bills to come to the House floor in a omnibus bill and or individual bills coming forward. So what House File 3611 does is adds a couple things to the uniform outcome report. And the reason that I have been doing this for a good number of years is that the more information that we get on the workforce programs, their success, their I don't want to say failures because I don't think they're failures, but, you know, how are we getting folks into long-term jobs, family-sustaining jobs? How are we doing the training that this needs and can how can we better improve these training programs to do a better job so that people aren't coming back more than once or twice for training to improve their job skills and be able to sustain families. And what this bill does, and it's on page 2, line 15, a list of program goals as defined in the grant agreement and an analysis of the program's progress in achieving the goals as defined in the grant agreement. You know, it may cost some money, and they need to bring that forward to talk to us about what they believe the individual programs would have to spend in order to do that analysis and present it to us. And they need to present that to us prior to us acting upon it on in committee and putting it into our budgets. It is, I can go through a whole number of these things, but we just don't have that, we don't have the in-depth analysis. And there's a couple of other ways we can do this. We can, analytics, but that's an awfully expensive program. And I'd like to see if something like this works first, an analytical, analysis of the program done on a it costs about somewhere between $75,000 and $125,000, and I don't think that's a bad investment for us to make, but we can't afford to make it to every one of those particular programs. I think we're over 175 workforce programs, so I'm going to leave it to somebody else to come up with a way to, as a pipe fitter. They don't check each and every one of my wells with an x-ray because that's pretty expensive. But they check one out of 10. Maybe that's the kind of program we do with workforce to, and not to use it as a punishment, but to use it as a way that they can improve their program. I have for years heard of people going through the programs of workforce training and really not getting or maintaining the job. There's no sense in training someone who had trouble getting out of high school to try to be a brain surgeon. We need to find better ways of getting that high school graduate a job that pays $50,000 a year. I've always looked at our workforce training programs not so much as a job training program, but a program of how we get people to have self-respect and pride in their life and work with their kids and make a better life for their families, but also for our cities of St. Paul, Minneapolis, Rochester, St. Cloud, the state of Minnesota. And, you know, if you're paying your, I can go on and on, I could do that for a long time. I have someone from one of the philanthropic groups to talk a little bit about this, and then open it up for other witnesses or questions.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney.
Good morning. Welcome. Please state your name.
Good morning. My name is Eric Mushler. I'm a program officer with the McKnight Foundation. Appreciate the invitation to speak on the outcome report card. So I'm here today on behalf of the Minneapolis-St. Paul Workforce Innovation Network, or MSP-WIN for short. MSP-WIN is a philanthropic collaborative created around 2012 to work together towards a prosperous and equitable state where businesses have the skilled workers that they need to compete and all Minnesotans have the opportunity to participate in workforce and advanced toward family-sustaining wages. In MSP WIN's first few years, we helped create a uniform outcome report card, in part to help ourselves understand the various self-reported and variety of program documentation coming out of the workforce development system. We wanted to have a more consistent and transparent reporting mechanism for outcomes for our own use and for the state workforce investments. MSP WIN members are funders of workforce development programs, just like the legislature, and we believe that having a single regular reporting structure with standard definitions and key data points would help provide all of us more clarity about the outcomes of the programs that are working and for whom they're working. But our principal motivation for championing the uniform report card was not for the sake of compliance, reporting, or even accountability, though it does all those three things. The fundamental reason was to foster a workforce system that supports learning and continuous improvement, which I mean provide ever increasing value to both program participants and businesses that need skilled workforce. Our hope was that this kind of tool and the analysis it enables would help Minnesota close the skills gap, respond to employers' needs better, and improve the reach and better serve the changing demographics of our workforce. Unfortunately, the report card has not been as used consistently as we had hoped to help guide funding decisions and thus has not had the impact on the overall workforce system that was desired. Yet we still believe measuring outcomes is vital and the report card remains a valuable framework for that measurement. We did not want to see this become a report for a report's sake. We want it to be a relevant and useful tool for you, for DEED, for service providers, for other funders and the public. So we are very interested to hear the discussion around Chair Mahoney's proposal in front of you today. Regular reviewing and improving the report card can ensure it contains the information you need to assist in your decision-making and learning, which is imperative. A strong measurement tool like this can lead not only to improvements in workforce programs, but also to improvements in understanding how effectively or ineffectively we are serving key populations as we move toward common goals of workforce and equity goals. It could be also helpful in demonstrating to the business community that our investments are smart and achieving results that are relevant to their needs and interests. So I want to thank you again for the invitation to speak today and give a little bit of context for the uniform report card. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Any question? I have Representative Moran, and then Baker, and then we'll start with Representative Moran.
Thank you, Chair Noor. So you mentioned that to the testifier that there has been since 2012, they've been trying to utilize uniform report card, but it hasn't worked. Do you have any reports back about why it's not working?
The information's there. It's used by a lot of people within the workforce system, not always used by the legislature and looking at where earmarks might be going, not always used by DEED itself because of the existing funding streams and partners that already are in place with DEED. But increasingly, I think people are looking to it as a place that there's some commonality in what we can look at. So, for example, MSP WIN took some of that analysis from the report card and can show that career pathway programs have greater outcomes than some of their other programs. In the end, the difference in wage increase for career pathway programs tends to be higher. They're serving diverse populations more readily. So there's a lot of things to take from it, and it is that analysis for MSP WIN that put us on a path to really support things like pathway programs more readily.
Representative Moran.
Chair Noor. So you also mentioned words like, you know, I'm not sure if I can agree with a uniform system of reporting, whether that is best for all, you know, because, you know, it's a matter of whom or whom is working for. You know, those, it matter, those things matter. Whether the standards can be cumbersome for maybe a bigger entity than a smaller or communities of color, you know, what's the barriers to success or outcomes or impacts or, you know, so, you know, I guess I'm looking for you, you know, not so much as what's not working, but why it's not working and what some of the data from 2012 to 2020 is where we need to be going to get some uniformity across all those sectors that you spoke about, including what is happening at D, what's happening here at the legislature, as we're making decisions, do they really align what is happening back out in the community in regards to the workforce? So if you have anything to share on paper, that would be great.
So I think part of the context of any analysis is really critical to understanding and use the uniform report card. So I think that's very valuable. I think providing that context to a program is one of the things that is helpful in understanding what the sort of hard data points are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's actually part of what, again, our interest was in learning mm-hmm. and continuous improvement. And I do think that such a report can provide sort of that feedback loop, if you will, and make improvements to particular programs, who they serve, how they're served. And I think there are examples of programs that use this information in ways that feed back into their program, looking at their own practices.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
If I may, Representative Moran, mm-hmm. we actually brought that forward about 5 or 6 years ago, in part in their original concepts, and they brought them forward. It was not well received by those that we fund and try to force them to do continuous improvement. There was great resistance when Representative Norton and I put together the present report from almost each and every one of the workforce training programs. They said, well, we come to you and tell you in committee. Isn't that good enough? And when I asked, do you have any proof of this success or failures? Well, we don't keep those records because it will cost us too much money to, we'll have to take money away from training in order to do that. We wouldn't send money, we don't send money out if we can help it without having proof, data that tells us that they're doing a good job or a bad job. So I wouldn't put it on to MSP Win. They got screamed at. And that's from people that they fund. So it was pretty brazen, in my opinion, to say, oh, by the way, we want $500,000, but blah, 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 blah. I don't get it. I think it has to be brought forward by legislative and legal proceedings.
Representative Moran.
Yes. So, Chair Mahoney, I believe in accountability. I think we all had to be accountable to something or someone. I do believe in that. But what I also heard you say, which is probably true, is that the little smaller money that they're getting, or what they're getting in the training process, does not support the staff they need to do the work that we're asking them to do. So I think sometimes, you know, maybe we can't respond to that question. Maybe a bigger organization can handle that, but for a smaller business, it can be burdensome, and it takes away from the work that they're trying to do. And so I think when we hear feedback, some of the things that we could maybe consider is like what would it take for them to hire someone or have some entity to do that work, because it comes at a cost. It's not free, you know. So, and that's my part about the uniformity, that we think that a bigger organization can operate as a small business, and they can't. And so how do we, what is our part to play if we want to report back, to hear that and then respond in a way so that we can get what we want?
All right, we have Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And two quick questions. But by the way, number one, I think what our Chair Mahoney is adding into the bill is really a good thing. I think as you kind of leave this in other hands now, this is sort of your last rodeo here, as you've mentioned before, it's good that we kind of take a little deeper dive. I think a lot of reports that we see, and I've never been a chair before, but you get reports like this. It's I hope that a lot of folks don't just kind of glaze over some of these without really kind of know the depth of these programs. This is, you're asking some good questions and some good additions. To the testifier, I need to ask the question, as you track these folks after three consecutive quarters or eight consecutive quarters, to the gentleman from McKnight, are you having a hard time tracking them after eight consecutive quarters? And also the second question is, can people go through the program more than once?
Mr. Moshman.
So the data that comes to the Uniform Report Card cuts across a couple of different departments. I don't know the extent to which or the length of time to which they track. I'm not sure how long that's possible. I believe that it's possible and can be defined as a longer term. The report card does provide the best long-term outcome for wages and understanding of where someone starts to where someone is, you know, quite a few quarters out, which is the durability of a report card like this, is to provide that level. And it's not as difficult as asking a program itself to try to track individuals through that time period. That's what's really costly. But through data, we're able to sort of pull those together effectively and efficiently and see what those outcomes look like over time.
And my second question to the testifier, do participants, are they allowed to participate if it's been more than a couple years back in the program?
Mr. Marshall?
I don't know the rules of the different programs. Okay. I think one of the things that we understand as funders within the system, that there is churn that happens within a system like this. In part, it's because the first job might be a part-time job. They're working two part-time jobs. They lose a job because of an illness. So there's a churn, and part of what I think philanthropy has been trying to think about is, what are the programs that lead toward career pathways and more sustainable careers versus jobs that are filling a time period but not sufficient to create that sort of livable wage and pathway toward a healthy career ladders within particular industries.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill. As you know, Chair Mahoney, I care deeply about the accountability in all of these programs, something we've had many discussions about. And with all respect to Chair Moran's point, I do think that this sort of baseline common reporting is essential for us to be able to do our jobs. And my understanding, honestly, I'm new. I didn't know this was even a tool we had. And it appears that the last report came out in December of 2018. So was this part of the discussion of programs we funded? Did we use this tool? I don't recall seeing this in committee. I don't recall receiving it. Like, how do we, as members who have to exercise oversight, gain access to this? When, I guess now I know about it, I'll look for it next year when it comes out in December 2020. But, like, if this is out there, was this part of our discussion as a committee last year on what received funding, and how do we as a body incorporate this into our deliberations? Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Yes, I mean, I know I mentioned it more than once in committee for a variety of, so I'm not too worried about that. And I certainly used it when I was going through the bill, you know, what was a yes or a no, and of course that all went out the window when we got the conference committee, but that's typical sometimes. This should be something, if I was here next year as chair, it would have been part of the requirement that any bill that comes before the committee have this report included in its packet or in its the comments that, you know, whoever is presenting the bill has to make. And next year, I would have worked yet this year to put money out there to figure out how to, or money to come up with what we should be able to help organizations of a certain size do this kind of accountability. Because again, as I said earlier, you know, you can do it that way, much cheaper, or you can do it with an analytic discussion or look at what these organizations, you know, 1 out of 10 organization every year. And that's kind of to keep everybody on their toes about this stuff. So, and then there's the other way of what you have to do is get the student, the client, to sign a waiver that allows you to do, to go into the government data and pull out their name by Social Security and track that person. That gets into data privacy and a number of other places, and I don't think you want to do that, although I think we, you know, I think workforce training has to have a much, much better outcome, or we may have to do that because it's not being very successful. I've heard 3 or 4 questions about do people go back? Yes. Anecdotally, I know people who have been back to the workforce training 5, 6, 7 times. That's very frustrating. The cost of that is about somewhere between $8,000 and $15,000 per training. So that person that we sent through 5 times is $75,000.
Chair Mahoney,
a lot of money.
Are we not collecting the data in Workforce One, which is used by DEED? And are they not using their business intelligence program, which they collect analysis of the data at this point? I know for students, it's a separate issue, but for every program that we have, are we not using Workforce One as our underlying reporting process? Because everyone you have to track, and it's connected to different entities from DHS to other programs so that we can see how these programs are aligned. Are we not doing that from the department perspective?
We can certainly call DEED down if you would like, but I believe that we are. I believe we are way more sideload than we probably should be.
Representative Haley. Oh, Representative.
I just want to thank you for that answer, Chair Mahoney, and encourage us as a committee to use this tool in the future, and. If there are other tools out there like that, I think it might be helpful for whoever's on the committee next time to, when the report card comes out, have a hearing on it so that we're all looking at it and seeing the results and thinking through together what's effective and what's not. Thank you.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Mahoney. I can appreciate the long process that you've had in trying to get accountability and reporting, so thank you for that effort. And to the testifier, can you repeat your name? Because I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
Eric Mushler.
Mr. Mushler, thank you so much. I'm curious if there's a methodology that MSP WINS or the McKnight Foundation uses. I'm familiar with one called results-based accountability. And we can have a spreadsheet as such and a report card that tells us, you know, number of participants and who came in and who came out and what their wages were, et cetera. But
a different methodology that really says, what difference did it make? What difference did it make? And whose life is better because of XYZ? That's what, you know, Chair Mahoney talks often about. That's what we're here for. That's what we're trying to do. So I'd like you to talk about that a little bit, if there's a methodology you've used in the past or recommended that would be different than a spreadsheet report card.
So,
Mr. Marshall.
From MSP WIN's perspective, results-based accountability is a model that we've considered from the beginning, trying to sort of get at understanding it's a very complex system, and so the clarity that the outcome tool here has is a form of results-based accountability. I think it's careful to have one report that can tell a whole story, not often true, right? So the context of any program is critically important. But the attitude that we have is that continuous improvement is something that needs to be built in to any system. And that in particular, I think, in Deed's case, is something that I start to hear a real desire to have that sort of feedback loop, program improvement over time. We actually had an effort based at the University of Minnesota that MSP WIN funded that was working directly with programs using some of this data and other tools that were doing exactly what we hoped would happen, which was continuous learning and continuous improvement in program. Because there are real differences in the population being served, where they enter a program, what program the funding comes from, are some of the limiting factors at times in providing sort of the best support you can provide for each individual family. And so weaving the programs together and resources together to provide and have success is really critically important. So that's some of what I think MSP WIN has been as we came together as a learning collaborative, have moved forward on different approaches that allow us to sort of have that result-based accountability in our head all the time and look to program improvement over time.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A much longer discussion can be had than what we have time for today, but I guess just want to call that out, that there are methodologies like results-based accountability that I think any organization, regardless of size, can do. It becomes part of their culture and their process to focus on, again, are we moving the needle? We've implemented that in my community for every organization that the United Way funds, as an example. So it's not, it doesn't necessarily cost people more money to do it. It costs, obviously, in training. And take some time to adopt, but I've seen it work very well. So thank you for your comments.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Mahoney, for bringing this bill up. I do believe in accountability, and I think that everything that we fund, we should see results. The only problem and the concern that I have, and this is what I heard from community organizations, is that DEED doesn't have tools for reporting, and if there is a tool, it's not effective. So I don't want us to burden community organizations that have limited resources to something that they won't be able to measure up to. So are we creating resources for this report? Is there, would DEED do trainings to community organizations? Would there be, my only concern is that when we say uniform report card, that one size fits all. And then the only organization that will amount up to this and will be able to come up with something are organizations that are large, that has the funding to do that, whereas a small organizations that are predominantly like communities of color wouldn't be able to, you know, either have the funding to do this. 2 weeks ago, I think, Representative Noor and I attended a graduation for 30-plus students that graduated from CNA program. And Senator Hayden was there as well. It was collaboration between DEED and a small community organization. I'm sure that community, small community organization reported to DEED that, okay, here is the, you know, what we did with the dollars that you gave us. But where that report goes, I don't know. So my only concern is that, yes, we want accountability, but how do we make sure that we are not burdening those community organizations that are doing the work, that are at the front line of this issue, and how do you make sure that we are putting out there some sort of measurement tool that we're also providing the resources to go with it? Thank you.
Chair Mahoney.
Mr. Chair. I have been working on accountability for 20 years here. And every time I bring a proposal forward, there are multiple organizations that scream, we can't do it, we can't do it, we don't have resources, you don't give us enough money, you don't do this, you don't do that. Frankly, at this point, I believe it's a concerted effort by the workforce training businesses to hamstring the legislature. And I have lost almost all my faith in workforce training programs. So if you want to do this, we can do this. But understand that a 20-year veteran of this program, and I have fought hard for these programs for 20 years, I don't have any faith. I have very little faith in them anymore. I think there are things that I can't say on a tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think one of the big pluses that we have by having a report card like this is that
we have a report card. This is adding two things to it.
Yeah, well, I agree. But they already have some of these things, and we read how well these programs are doing or how they can improve. That's the thing that we're going for. We're looking for those programs that can, with DEED's help and other people's help, improve and become better and more productive. But at the same time, if they can't, it's maybe time that we reward those that are doing the right thing, that are producing the right products, to get more money while we eliminate the ones that aren't. It's a tough way of looking at it, but if you do not produce certain things within your program, if you're not doing what your program was designed to do, maybe it's time when we take a program like yours, give them more, and take yours away.
Chair Mahoney, any closing remarks and renewing your motion?
Mr. Chair, I can't remember. Is we holding this over, or are we passing it on?
I'd
like to renew my motion that House File 3694 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Chair renews his motion 3611 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Mahoney,
I'm sorry, wait, did I say House File 3694? How about we try 3611?
Yep, I corrected that one, Mr. Chair. So we have House File 3694 in front of us.
Yeah. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 3694. Is it going to the floor or to the floor? This is the housekeeping bill for the Bureau of Mediation Services. Section one. This reduces the initial application fee from $100 to $50. I'm sorry, that's the second piece. The first piece is it changes the words papers to documents for filing purposes. This allows electronic filing. So section subdivision three changes paper to document, which allows for electronic submission. The second part of the second paragraph is reduces the fees from $100 to $50, and then it repeals In Section 2, it repeals some outdated statutes that are just not needed any longer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Mahoney moves House File 3694 to be placed in the General Register. Any discussions about the technical amendments? Seeing none, Mr. Chair, will you please renew your motion for House File 3694?
Mr. Chair, I'd like House File 3694 to be passed to the House floor, General Register.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? See none. Motion passes. See no any other further business in front of us. We are adjourned.